Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about René Descartes, a French philosopher, famous mathematician. He really stood at the transition from maths being conversational or something you thought in your head to something you did algebraic, analytical maths as we know it. Very important thing, and he sort of was the first person to actually synthesize a philosophy from other philosophies for a fair while. It's hard to say. Now, this is the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, and the idea is that we get a deeper understanding of Descartes rather than the fluffy YouTube introductions to him, sort of like a textbook where they spend half a page. This is nigh on 100 pages, and it'll probably take 20 episodes to read through. And at this point, this is episode one, and the reason I'm reading through is to increase my reading cognitive ability and to go a little bit deeper, right? Having built an engine to promulgate these podcasts. So let's start. The author, unfortunately, is not put up in the printing, and nor are the page numbers. Unfortunately, one page got caught in the printer, and it's missing somewhere in there, so there'll be a gap if you stay and listen. René Descartes published with revision, first published 2008, revised 2014. René Descartes, 1596 to 1650, was a creative mathematician of the first order, a most important scientific thinker, and an original metaphysician. During the course of his life, he was a mathematician first, a natural scientist or a natural philosopher second, and a metaphysician third. In mathematics, he developed the techniques that made possible algebraic or analytic geometry. In natural philosophy, he can be credited with several specific achievements: co-framer of the sine law of refraction, developer of an important empirical account of the rainbow, and proposer of a naturalistic account of the formation of the Earth and planets, a precursor to nebula hypothesis. Okay, well, I think there's a lot more that he says. He didn't get them absolutely perfect right, but he's got a lot more in there. More importantly, he offered a new vision of the natural world that continues to shape our thought today, a world of matter possessing a few fundamental properties and interacting according to a few universal laws. That is pretty much it. He came up with the idea of a universal law. The natural world included the immaterial mind in human beings and was directly related to the brain. In this way, Descartes formulated the modern version of the mind-body problem. In metaphysics, he provided arguments for the existence of God to show that the essence of matter is extension and the essence of mind is thought. That's just quite an interesting aspect of it. I don't know how useful that is. Descartes claimed early on to possess a special method, which was variously exhibited in mathematics, natural philosophy, and metaphysics, in which, in the later part of his life, included or was supplemented by a method of doubt. Now, that is actually the most important thing about him. Descartes presented his results in major works published during his lifetime: The Discourse of the Mind in French, 1637, with his essays in Dioptrics, Metrology, Geometry, Meditations on the First Philosophy, and Objections and Replies, published in Latin; The Principles of Philosophers, covering metaphysics and much of his natural philosophy; and The Passions of the Soul, on emotions. Importantly, works published posthumously include Letters, World or Treatise on Light, containing a core of his natural philosophy; in French, Treatise on Man, containing his physiology and mechanistic psychology; The Rules and the Direction of the Mind, an early unfinished work attempting to set out his method. That is actually quite interesting aspect. Descartes was known among the learned of his day as a top mathematician, as a developer of a new comprehensive physics or theory of nature, including living things, and as a proposer of a new metaphysics. In the years following his death, his natural philosophy was widely taught and discussed. In the 18th century, aspects of his science remained influential, especially his physiology, as did his project of investigating the knower as assessing the possibility and extent of human knowledge. He was also remembered for his failed metaphysics and his use of skeptical arguments for doubting. In the 19th century, he was revered for his mechanistic physiology and theory that animal bodies are machines, that is, constituted by material mechanisms governed by the laws of matter alone. You've got to remember that prior to him, animals were still mystic beings. They were just, you know, they were distinguished as people. 20th century variously celebrated his famous cognito, starting point, I think I, therefore I am, reviled the sense of data that some alleged to be the legacy of his skeptical starting point, and looked to him as a model of culturally engaged philosopher. Definitely, he's a super philosopher. He has been seen at various times to be a hero and as a villain, as a brilliant theorist who set new directions of thought, and as a harbinger of cold, rationalistic, calculative conception of the human beings. Those who study Descartes should engage in his works in some detail prior to developing a view of his legacy. And that's, my friends, what we're doing at the moment. We're going in. And I think that's a good warning to everyone. You should really spend a little time, an hour or so. I think it's going to take an hour all up to get through this. Intellectual biography 1.1, early life and education. Descartes was born on 31st of March 1596 in his maternal grandmother's house in La Haye. Okay, I sort of remember that Descartes was actually born in Descartes, which is, okay, in Lorraine, Train region of France. His father, Joachim, a lawyer who lived in Châtellerault, 22 kilometres southwest of La Haye, across the Creuse River in the Poitou region, was at the Parliament of Brittany in Rennes. The town of La Haye, which lies 47 kilometres south of Tours, was subsequently been renamed Descartes. Okay, there you go. When Descartes was 13 and 1.5 months old, his mother, Gina Bruchard, died in childbirth. The young René spent the first years of his with his grandmother, Jean Saint Bruchard, in La Haye, together with his older brother Pierre and older sister Jean. It's likely that when he moved to the house of his great uncle, Michel Ferrand, who, like many of René's male relatives, was a lawyer, and who was a counselor to the king in Châtellerault, when Descartes met Isaac Beckman, not Beckham, in 1618, Descartes introduced himself as Poitevin, or Poitou. Okay, so it's Poitou region. Okay. Some references here. At this time, and now and again later on, he signed his letters Du Perron and called himself Sir de Perron, the Lord of Perron, after a small farm in Poitou, where he inherited his mother's from his mother's family. But he did not neglect his birthplace at La Haye. In a letter of 1649, he described himself as a man who was born in the gardens of Touraine. In 1606 or 1607, Descartes entered a newly founded Jesuit college of La Flèche, where he remained until 1614 or 1615. He followed the usual course of his studies, which included 6 to 5 years of grammar school, including Latin and Greek grammar, classical poet Cicero, followed by 3 years of philosophy curriculum. By rule, Jesuit's philosophy curriculum followed Aristotle, of course it would. It was divided into then standard topics of logic, morals, physics, and metaphysics. The Jesuits also included mathematics in the final 3 years of studies. Aristotle's philosophy was approached through textbook presentations and commentaries on Aristotle's works. How mind-bending. Aristotle himself frequently discussed the positions of his ancient predecessors. The most extensive commentaries were elaborated in some details on positions other than Aristotle's. With this framework and taking into account the reading of Cicero, Descartes would have been exposed in school to the doctrines of the ancient atomists, Plato, and the Stoics. I have to really quite understand that. And he would have heard of the skeptics. Further important intellectual events were known at La Flèche, including the discovery of the moons of Jupiter by Galileo in 1610. So that gives you an idea who's contemporary of Galileo. Hence, although scholastic Aristotelian philosophy was dominant at his school, it was not the only type of philosophy he knew. Famously, Descartes wrote an autobiography portion of the Discourse that, when he left school, I found myself beset by so many doubts and errors that I became to think I gained nothing from my attempts to become educated but increasing recognition of my ignorance. And yet, in the next paragraph, he allowed that he did not cease to value the exercises done at schools for languages, fables, oratory, poetry, mathematics, morals, and theology, and philosophy all had their value, as did the jurisprudence, medicine, and other sciences, including engineering, which served as professions and one might study after attending such a school as La Flèche. So he famously said, you can't get away from it, that schools teach a parody of reason. That's when he was saying you need the method because you just get taught a parody of reason. He went on to note the contradiction and disagreement that beset philosophy and so infected the higher sciences, including medicine, insofar as they borrow their principles from philosophy. A year later, in 1638, he advised an inquiring father. Okay, so Dad's asking, what's that asking? That, quote, nowhere on earth is philosophy taught better than La Flèche, unquote, where he advised his correspondent to send his son, even if he wanted him subsequently to strengthen the learning of schools, while also suggesting that his son might study at Utrecht with Henri Leroy, a disciple of Descartes. Okay. Descartes, in the Discourse, suggesting that it was no accident that the philosophy he learned in La Flèche was uncertain. The previous philosophy was bound to be uncertain since he, Descartes, was now offering a new glimpse of a true philosophy that he had only discovered recently. Until it could be promulgated, La Flèche or another good school would be the best on offer. So this is interesting that Descartes was an innovator, and I suppose because he didn't have a philosophical court, he wasn't the court philosopher. He wasn't teaching in university, so it's sort of like your self-made philosophy, do-it-yourself philosophy, although it was Descartes doing it. His family wanted Descartes to be a lawyer. It's strange, you'd say René to be a lawyer, Descartes. Unlike his father and many other relatives, to this end, he went to Poitiers to study law, obtaining a degree in 1616. But he never practiced law or entered into the governmental service. Such practice would make impossible, whatever that means, such practice would make possible. Instead, he became a gentleman soldier, moving in 1618 to Breda to support the Protestant Prince Maurice against the Catholic parts of the Netherlands, which later formed Belgium, which were controlled by Spain, a Catholic land like France, but at this point, an enemy. Okay. 1.2, first results, new mission and method. While in Breda, Descartes met Isaac Beckman, a Dutch mathematician and natural philosopher. Beckman set various problems for Descartes, including a question about falling bodies, hydrostatics, and mathematical problems. Descartes and Beckman engaged in what they called physico-mathematica, or mathematical physics. Since antiquity, mathematics had been applied to various physical subject matters in optics, astronomy, mechanics, focusing on the lever and hydrostatics. Beckman and Descartes brought to this work a commitment to atoms as basic as the constituents of matter, as had the ancient atomists, and they attributed not only size, shape, and motion, but also weight to those atoms. Amazing. Good on you, Descartes. This is true. When you read it, you say, well, what's going on here? Descartes opened a section of his notebook titled Democrata, in honour of the ancient atomist Democritus. At the time, Descartes discovered and conveyed to Beckham the fundamental insight that makes analytical geometry possible, a technique for describing lines of all sorts by using mathematical equations involving ratios between lengths. Descartes himself did not foresee replacing geometrical constructions with algebraic formula. Rather, he viewed geometry as the basic mathematical science, and he considered his algebraic techniques provide a powerful alternative to actual compass and ruler constructions, which later combined became too intricate. That's really interesting there. Okay, so the graphs were really there. He added the equations graph. When in the 19th century, algebra analyzed precedence over geometry, the rectilinear coordinate system of algebraic geometry became known as the Cartesian coordinates in honor of Descartes' discovery. Very important, the graph is Descartes. Descartes left Breda in 1619 to join the Catholic army of Maximilian I, Duke of Bavaria and allied to France. The war concerned the authority of Ferdinand V, a Catholic who had been crowned Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire in September. Descartes attended the coronation and was returning to the army when winter caught him in a small town of Ulm, or perhaps Neuburg, not far from Munich. On the night of November the 10th, 1619, Descartes had three dreams that seemed to provide him with a mission in life. This is interesting stuff, I didn't know this. The dreams themselves are interesting and complex. Descartes took them from the method that he has a message that he should set out to reform all knowledge, and decided to bring begin with philosophy, since the principles of other science must be derived from it. So that's pretty amazing. One night, November 10th is a D-Day. I'm sort of sympathetic to this. Descartes was familiar with both mainstream philosophy and recent innovators, those who, among other things, rejected aspects of Aristotle's philosophy. Starting really with Galileo's dad, including reading that he did from 1620 on. In 1640, he recalled having read various works in philosophy around the year 1620, written by the well-known commentators on Aristotle, Francisco Toledo and Antonio Rubo, and Cambrian commentators, together with an abstract summary of the whole scholastic philosophy by Eustace of St. Paul, whose Summa Philosophiae was first published in 1609. I'll have to read that one. In 1638, he recalled having read Thomas Cambellier's De Sensu Reum about 15 years before and not being much impressed. And in 1630, he was able to rattle off the names of recent innovators in philosophy, including Cabello, Telesco, Giordano Bruno. He's my superstar hero, Bruno. Giordano Bruno, love him. Lucio Vanini and Sebastian Besson, whoever those people are, gone in history. Descartes' activities during the early 1920s are not well documented. He was in France part of the time, visiting Poitou to sell some inherited properties in 1622 and visiting Paris. He went to Italy in 1623-25 and returned and lived in Paris, where he was in touch with the mathematician and national philosophers in the circle of his long friend, correspondent Martin Mersenne. Oh, Mersenne! He's a famous person, Mersenne Primes. I know all about that one. While in Paris, he worked on some mathematical problems and derived the sine law for refraction, which facilitated his work on formulating mathematically the shapes of lenses, later published in Dioptrics. His major philosophical effort during these years was on the rules, a work to convey his new method. Really interesting, his work with the bullseye. He dissected a bull to get the basic optics. In the rules, he sought to generalize the methods of mathematics so that as to provide a rule to clear knowledge of everything in human beings can know. His methodological advice included suggesting that is familiar to every student of elementary geometry. Break your work up into small steps that you understand completely and without which you have utter certainty. Check your work often, but he also gives advice for ambitious seeker of truth concerning where to start and how to work up to greater things. Thus, Rule 10 reads, in order to acquire discernment, we should exercise our intelligence by investigating what others have already discovered and methodically survey even the most insignificant products of human skill, especially those which display order. As examples of simple arts in which order prevails, he offered the carpet making and embroidery. An also number games and rhythmic games. He went on to discuss the roles of cognitive facilities in acquiring knowledge, which include intellect, imagination, sense of perception, and memory. These facilities follow the seeker of knowledge to combine simple truths in order to solve complex problems, such solutions to problems in optics and the discovery of how a magnet works. Wow. That's quite interesting. And that is really basically underpins, I suppose, gifted and talented thought. By the end of 1628, Descartes had abandoned work on the rules, having completed about half of his projected treatise. In that year, he moved to the Dutch Netherlands, and after he returned to France infrequently, prior to moving to Sweden. Oh, God, poor man. While in the Netherlands, he endeavoured to keep his address a secret, and he changed locations frequently in accordance with his motto, "Who lives well hidden lives well." And I sort of like that. I think that's what a nice person. He was also a bit paranoid of getting a Galileo treatment. And, you know, that's it's such an important thing. So that ends this podcast. And in a certain sense, you've really got to knuckle down, not spend so much time promoting yourself, and actually live secretly and move things away. Very interesting to read that. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.